WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. If you go outside today, you may be blown away. Well, it won't be that bad, but winds will gust at 40 to 55 miles an hour, according to lead forecaster at the National Weather Service, Brendan Rubin-Oster. The severe weather system that moved across the central U.S. is heading our way today. Luckily, we won't have low temperatures because of wind chill.
So the winds are coming out of the south, so it's bringing in warmer air from the south, so it's going to keep temperatures rather mild. We're expecting high temperatures today, actually in the 70s, which is above normal for the start of April.
He says winds will be strong enough to topple some trees and knock down power lines. And that storm has killed at least 7 people and dozens injured in Arkansas and Illinois. Tornadoes hammered much of the central U.S. yesterday. Arkansas resident Deborah Allard Tracker and her fiance were driving north of Little Rock and rode it out in their car.
We just couldn't believe it was there. We could see it coming at us, and there was nothing we could do. I mean, it was upon us before we knew what was going on.
The governor has declared a state of emergency, and 100 National Guard troops have been called in to help residents. People ran for their lives after a tornado caused the roof of the Apollo Theater in Illinois to collapse during a heavy metal concert. One person died and dozens were injured there. Former President Trump is asked to surrender himself in New York after a grand jury voted to indict him on multiple charges of falsifying business records, including at least one felony in connection with the hush money case involving adult film star Stormy Daniels. He'll be formally arrested and arraigned Tuesday.
We are just days away from the historic first arraignment of a former U.S. president here in New York City with a security briefing that took place Friday afternoon between the NYPD, FBI, New York State court officers, DA's office, and the Secret Service to finalize the details about the logistics and security of Tuesday's expected court proceedings. Now, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg had requested Trump surrender by Friday, the day after the indictment, but that timeline was extended, we've heard, due to arrangements that needed to be made by the Secret Service.
Fox's Laura Ingle. Pope Francis is out of the hospital after a 3-day stay to be treated for bronchitis. An endangered gorilla at the National Zoo is pregnant.
The mother-to-be is 20-year-old female Kalaya, who mated with 30-year-old male silverback Baraka last fall. Veterinarians have been performing regular ultrasounds.
We've got little hands, little fingers, and really good amniotic sac surrounding this baby with a lot of appropriate amniotic fluid.
So far, everything looks fine. The baby gorilla is due in early June. The National Zoo will post regular updates online. Just look for the hashtag Gorilla Story. Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the Wizards fall to the Magic, and in the NCAA Women's Tournament Final Four, top-seeded Virginia Tech was defeated by LSU. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Arlington, eastbound 66 in the area of the Roslyn Tunnel, the accident there blocking at least 2 lanes. They may be holding traffic temporarily to try to get this untangled. No problems on the Beltway in Virginia. Looking good on the main lines of 395, Interstate 95 looking good. The accident, looks like we have the accident southbound Anacostia Freeway right on the 11th Street Bridge. It could be blocking the ramp. No problems on the Beltway in Maryland and Route 50. You're looking good between the Beltway and Bay Bridge. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Tracking early morning rain and a few claps of thunder out there for your Saturday, but temperatures will start to warm into the 70s due to the very windy southwest winds. That will start to pick up right around your lunchtime. I expect those gusts to reach 49 to even 55 miles per hour between 5 and 8 p.m. as the main boundary pushes through. That could also bring a slight chance for a few showers later this evening as well. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 64 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday morning update.
Hour 2 of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
For the last 36 hours or so, it's been nonstop conversation about the Trump indictment, many different angles, and a couple angles I wanted to look at with you. All right, number one, we've sort of been down this road before, in a way, with John Edwards. And for people not familiar with the John Edwards campaign and what happened when he had a little payment issue, how about a refresher?
Well, John Edwards, the Democratic vice presidential nominee in 2004 and U.S. Senator from North Carolina, it was revealed, had used campaign funds to pay a mistress who was also the mother of his out-of-wedlock child. This was hush money, pure and simple. It went to a jury, and he faced criminal counts. But in the end, the jury did not convict him. Why? Because this was such a broad area. What the punishment would be was unclear, and quite honestly, he had used campaign funds for this, and it was not specifically barred by any campaign finance accounts. The jury, uncertain of which way to go, simply punted on this, and Edwards walked. In any event, it's very likely that a jury in New York will not go into the netherworld of where to use campaign funds and whether paying hush money is a subject for conviction. Paying hush money is not illegal in New York. I might add that all of this took place in 2016, days before the election, when Stormy Daniels, a porn star and alleged mistress of Donald Trump, something he has never failed to deny, received $130,000 from Michael Cohen, then an attorney with the Trump Organization. He was later reimbursed and given funds for the tax liability he would face, he said. In any event, we are talking about something that's in another world, that's dark and uncertain, and where no jury has gone before.
We'd like to learn a little more about George Soros' relationship with Alvin Bragg. We know that George Soros has funded many races around the country supporting very progressive prosecutors in major urban areas. The relationship with the New York DA, Alvin Bragg.
All right. George Soros, the billionaire paymaster of the left in American politics, wrote last year in a rare op-ed, "Our system is rife with injustices that make us all less safe." Now, when he was asked about the links he has to Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who has pushed the indictment against Donald Trump, Soros simply pointed to that op-ed of his, which appeared in the Wall Street Journal. And then he wrote, "As for Alvin Bragg, as a matter of fact, I did not contribute to his campaign, and I don't know him." He dismissed all the talk of a connection with Bragg as a far-fetched conspiracy theory. But according to the New York Times, George Soros donated $1 million to a progressive criminal justice group known as Color of Change. In fact, just days after it endorsed Bragg for Manhattan District Attorney, Color of Change ended up spending half that amount, $500,000, in support of Bragg. Soros' political action committee said he didn't contribute directly to Bragg's campaign. But if he supports reform-minded DAs, as he said in his op-ed, one has to ask, why didn't he contribute directly to Bragg's campaign, and why is he making an issue of all this?
John, I know this morning you're at the Pennsylvania State Leadership Conference of Republicans, and I know you've been there in the past, and this is a state event, correct?
Yes. It is roughly the Keystone State's equivalent of the National Conservative Political Action Conference. And anyone who considers himself a conservative in Pennsylvania shows up right here in Harrisburg.
So you're speaking at the breakfast. The speaker at lunch is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on Friday, who tweeted that the Bragg prosecution is un-American. What do you expect to hear from him today?
Governor DeSantis will be under pressure from this audience to say something further about the Trump indictment. In other words, it's fine that he tweeted, but many think this is calling for a statement on television, and Newsmax TV is televising his address at lunch and before the PLC, which is a respected conservative group. Might add, I've been talking to people last night and this morning. They're furious about the Trump indictment, and where many were willing to work for and actively support Ron DeSantis, the indictment has inflamed support for, guess who, Donald Trump. And I might add that by indicting him, Prosecutor Bragg has also energized and activated his core base. And as I said, it comes at a time that many were expecting to come over and support Governor DeSantis. That's all up in the air now.
Capitol Hill legislation this week, an energy bill passed, but it was a Republican energy bill that had bipartisan support. Explain that one to us.
Well, H.R. 1 is something that eases regulation and makes it easier for energy producers to do just that, produce energy in the private sector. It passed with not one, not two, not three, but four Democratic votes in the House, which is near historic. Supporters of the measure told me days before the vote this was going to happen. Now, in the Senate, someone like West Virginia's Democratic Senator Joe Manchin would be very sympathetic to this measure. Very possibly Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, a newly minted independent and former Democrat. But even if they got this votes, but even if they both voted for it and sent it to the White House, you know what's going to happen. Joe Biden will veto this because there's just not enough in it on climate change.
John, last weekend we spoke of the film Hotel Rwanda, Paul Rusesabagina, and he was released. We haven't heard about an invitation to the White House yet, have we?
No, we haven't. And remember, Paul Rusesabagina, played by Don Cheadle in the movie Hotel Rwanda, is famed for rescuing over 1,200 Rwandans during the period of that country's civil war and genocide in the 1990s. He's been honored around the world and received the Medal of Freedom from President George W. Bush. In September of 2020, Paul Rusesabagina was forcibly abducted while changing planes by the Rwandan government and sent back for a trial in the capital city of Kigali. He was convicted of treason and terrorism and received a 25-year prison sentence. All of this, people say, because he's been an opponent of the regime of President Paul Kagame. The White House and State Department had long denounced the manner in which he was arrested and called for his release after the trial. This finally happened when his sentence was commuted. Last week, I asked at the White House, given the president's support for Rusesabagina and the fact he's a free man, would he be inviting him to the White House soon? That has yet to be determined, but for now, there will be no meeting. According to his top spokeswoman, Karine Jean-Pierre. It does seem a little odd that the president and secretary of state would use their political capital on behalf of this man, and after achieving their goal, they don't invite him over to celebrate.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. We will be looking forward to your review of the DeSantis remarks next week.
This is something that's not going to be a one-day story, I assure you, Rick. Take care.
7:19, Saturday morning update on WMAL. We'll talk to Cheryl Atkinson next, and then we're back also with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland. So stick around with us on the Saturday morning update. Mike Franciati is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Eastbound Interstate 66 in the area of the Roslyn Tunnel. Still have the accident there blocking the left lane. There is a brief delay as you make your way eastbound through Arlington. No problems on the westbound lanes of Interstate 66. Beltway traffic is moving well. Going into Maryland, Beltway traffic moves well. The earlier problem we had, Allentown Road near Leon Street, that accident now completely gone. And Route 50, you're looking good. Wind warnings now in effect for the Bay Bridge. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Tracking early morning rain and a few claps of thunder out there for your Saturday, but temperatures will start to warm into the 70s due to the very windy southwest winds. That will start to pick up right around your lunchtime. I expect those gusts to reach 49 to even 55 miles per hour between 5 and 8 p.m. as the main boundary pushes through. That could also bring a slight chance for a few showers later this evening as well. Winds stay breezy overnight, but then tomorrow they start to back off. Temperatures cooler in the 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital. It's 7:20 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. Cheryl Atkinson is with us. And, of course, she is the host of Full Measure. That is tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. Cheryl, great to have you with us as always.
Thank you. Good morning.
You know, we've heard so much about the banking system and a lot of focus on finance and personal finance and retirement savings. And the U.S. Labor Department has recently made it easier for the sponsors of retirement plans to weigh environmental, social, and governance, ESG, factors into choosing funds for employee retirement plans. So right now, if you're an employee and you have a retirement plan, your fund manager can put these ESG funds into your account. The Republicans passed legislation against that rule because they prefer that sponsors focus on financial performance and not sustainable investing. So, Cheryl, help us understand this whole notion of ESG funds.
Well, I think we hear a lot about it. Maybe it's not well explained. But I would say in the simplest terms that I could understand, it's when big financial companies like BlackRock use their power to try to force investors like states that have taxpayer money to adopt certain liberal policies on things like climate change. And the story that I'm doing Sunday on Full Measure has to do with the backlash against this, because so many banks and companies were doing this and states were saying, like Louisiana, this is not in our interest. You're a company that doesn't like fossil fuel. That's one of the biggest, if not biggest, industry in our state. Why would we give our money to you? So they're turning the tables on this ESG, this kind of investing that these companies are doing. And in Louisiana, for example, they're now asking those companies a couple of questions that are deal breakers. If these companies support gun control, you know, laws that they think are not proper, if these companies do not support Israel, if they want to boycott Israel, and if these companies are against fossil fuel, then Louisiana won't do business with them anymore in terms of investment. And all told, other states are coming along, too, with this backlash. They've moved something like $5 billion out of BlackRock alone in recent months, and they're really getting attention for this. So I would say this is sort of the uprising against what a lot of people are calling woke investing.
And I think it's a story that anybody that has a retirement plan and funds invested in them needs to understand more about this, because we're going to hear a lot more about it.
We are. And let me just say twofold. So that's sort of another arm of the story that you told, that yes, the Biden administration wants retirement funds to be able to look at those kinds of factors when investing people's retirement money rather than just what's financially wise. And that's very controversial. But that's a way to support these social positions and political positions that the left likes. Well, like you say, the Republicans tried to stop that, but Republicans aren't in charge of the total Congress and, of course, the White House, so that's not going to happen. But separately, if you live in a state where your taxpayer money, which I guess all of us do, your taxpayer money is being invested by the state for various purposes, your state has some say in what companies it uses or invests your money in. Is it going to go to companies that further these agendas like BlackRock and Bank of America and so on? Or is your state going to say, we're purely going to invest in companies that have our interests at heart and aren't going to be working on policies that really don't line up with the citizens of our or the residents of our state?
You know, since 2015, we've heard the term the Freedom Caucus, of course, in the Republican arm of the Congress. And I think it's evolved over the years. Members have changed. So help us to understand sort of the current state and agenda of the Freedom Caucus. You have a very interesting interview tomorrow with one of the key players.
Well, would you believe that we don't even know the names of all the members of the Freedom Caucus? There are different groups or caucuses in Congress, the Black Caucus, the Tea Party Caucus at one time. The Freedom Caucus calls itself the conscience of the Republican Party. They are more conservative than the establishment Republicans. They don't necessarily like how what they would call the establishment Republicans have operated the party. And by the way, a lot of Americans are in line with that. So they have this Freedom Caucus, and we don't know all the members because they are so attacked, not only by Democrats, but by some members of their own party, that some of them don't let it be known that they're officially part of that caucus or that group. And they were pretty much responsible for that debacle we saw in January where Kevin McCarthy, I think he had to go through something like 14 votes to become Speaker of the House, the head of Republicans in January when Republicans took over. That was the doing of the Freedom Caucus members who were negotiating for certain things. And they got a lot of interesting concessions. So we're going to be talking about that with the leader of the Freedom Caucus, who's Congressman Scott Perry out of Pennsylvania. We'll see what he has in mind at a time when I think the Freedom Caucus probably has more influence than they've ever had in this Congress.
You know, when we hear news stories, we formulate opinions. Sometimes we don't go too deeply into it. And one might be around the Medellin area in Colombia. We've heard about the Colombian drug lords in Medellin. And there may be a little different take on that now.
Well, yeah, that was then, and this is now, and it turns out, certainly Colombia still has its issues, but Medellin has become a very cosmopolitan and somewhat popular city. But one thing that really helped transform this big city in Colombia in the past 20 years is something really forward-thinking that they did. I believe they were the first city to do this, but they installed a really innovative system of cable cars. And what that did was, normally the people, the poor people who lived up in the very steep mountains, there was a lot of crime and drug activity and poor people and no opportunity. They really had no way to get into town every day, to get into the city where there are opportunities and jobs and so on, because this, I think this is called one of the steepest places in the world in terms of a city to live. Well, the cable cars made it where they could easily commute now from these high hilltops and mountains into the city every day if they wish. And someone thought of that 20 years ago. And now they're talking about doing it or doing it in some other cities. But we're going to take a ride on the cable cars of Medellin and talk about the history and how that's really helped bring that city along into something else that has more opportunities for more people.
It's all tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock, with Cheryl Atkinson on Full Measure. As always, Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you.
7:28, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. KT McFarland on the way. Interesting conversation with KT this morning, and it is not about the Trump indictment. Stick around for that. And Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is on the way as well.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. A Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A monster storm system caused deadly tornadoes as it tore through the South and Midwest yesterday. It killed at least 7 people and injured dozens of others in Arkansas and Illinois. At least some of those people were at a heavy metal rock concert in Illinois when a tornado caused the roof to collapse. That weather system is moving through the DMV today. Lead forecaster at the National Weather Service, Brendan Rubin-Oster.
We won't expect stuff that they saw. We will see strong to locally damaging winds as this system moves through. So we're expecting winds gusting 45 to 55 miles per hour, gusting possibly up to 65 miles per hour in the afternoon and evening hours.
He says that wind could knock down trees and power lines. Former President Trump, is expected to surrender on Tuesday after being indicted on multiple charges in connection with the hush money case involving adult film star Stormy Daniels.
A source told Fox News Digital that an arrangement has been made so that the former president will not be placed in handcuffs as he surrenders. His attorney says the details on exactly how he's going to make it in and out of the courthouse are still being worked out. The Associated Press also reporting that Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has brought forth at least one felony charge against the former president. The former president has denied any affair or wrongdoing and has not been shy on social media in expressing his outrage at what he sees as political persecution.
WMAL Sports, the Wizards fell to the Magic. Traffic and weather next. Traffic, here's Mike Franciotti in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Still have the issue. Eastbound 66 at the Roslyn Tunnel, left lane appears to be blocked there. At this time, not much of a delay. The westbound lanes of 66 looking good. No issues on the Beltway at this time. And despite the wet pavement, 395 Interstate 95 looking good. Going into Maryland, no problems on the Beltway. 95 in the Parkway looking good. Wind warnings in effect at the Bay Bridge pretty much all day today. No issues on either side of the bridge at this time. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Temperatures will start to warm into the 70s due to the very windy southwest winds. That will start to pick up right around your lunchtime. I expect those gusts to reach 49 to even 55 miles per hour. Slight chance for a few showers later this evening as well. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 64 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
7:35, the Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, co-host of the Thought to Action podcast, and author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be here.
I think we were all kind of surprised this week to see Elon Musk come out and other tech leaders talking about artificial intelligence and the idea that maybe we need to take a pause on this for 6 months so that we don't get a little too far ahead of our skis. In other words, there's a threat that artificial intelligence could actually be more efficient than the human brain and ultimately could take over. And it's a scary thought, and I wanted to get your read on it, especially from kind of the national security angle and how this can impact the military. And, you know, if Russia has it, if China has it, we have it, what can happen?
Well, this is not new. I think it's just becoming something that people need to pay attention to more. I mean, the concept of weaponized technology to include things like AI have been going on since the 90s. I was involved early in some of the early weaponization programs, and it's something that's gone on clearly. The concern is that, I'm not making fun of this or light of this. There are popular movies where computers become sentient. One of them is Colossus, the Forman Project, back in the 60s. A computer becomes sentient, and then decides what it thinks is best, rather than the people who control it. Obviously, the whole Terminator series is based on the idea that AI becomes out of control. And science fiction is near science fact. There's actually something called Lambda that Google created, which one of the guys who created it now claims it's sentient. And fortunately, apparently, according to the research I did on this, the sentience is like an 8-year-old. It's not super, super smart. But the idea for AI, at least the military, is it supposed to be something focused on trying to help create conditions for more lethality of military weapons, something that allows for more rapid decision-making and execution and letting things actually be autonomous. The idea is you let these things think for themselves and they can think far faster than a human being. So it's okay if it all works. That is to say that, you know, these things work as designed. But to Musk's point, and I'm one who agrees, these things are being developed by a multitude of organizations, to include Google, his organization, and others. And, you know, the future's here. There's a potential danger of something going in a way that nobody anticipated. And I think he's right. I think it's time to take a pause and think about what we're doing with all these artificial intelligence programs and this autonomy that we're trying to get into the system. Rick, everything we have now is digital. Everything contains some level of chip or intelligence. We've given that intelligence everything from microwaves to our cell phones. And since everything is networked, something out there that could put them all together and make it work, it'd be good or bad. We just don't want anything bad to happen. So.
And about 98% of the things that we have around the house that are using all that technology come from China.
That's another thing to consider, absolutely.
I want to turn to the Trump indictment. We've talked a lot about it from a number of different perspectives this morning. But what about the national security aspect of it? How we look to others in the world right now?
That's the big criticism I've seen. I mean, the most direct issue is the appearance of it. The traditions of the United States and the laws have allowed for every president who served to be essentially left alone, no matter what the crime was. And the closest something came to actual indictment was Richard Nixon over the issues of Watergate. And that was something that was resolved. And even after he left office, he was pardoned by Gerry Ford, by President Ford. So the idea here that all of a sudden, over the barest premise, we haven't seen the charges yet, but I suspect we're going to see that these things were stretched hard to get to the point of where they could be put together in front of a grand jury, because everything I've read about this indicates that first off, the statute of limitations is gone. It's done. So that's the first thing. Secondly, the feds decided to not prosecute, another big clue. So the idea that a city such as New York can come up with laws which permit it to indict a president makes us, the United States, look like a banana republic that has no true law and order, especially in light of the fact that you have felonies ongoing every day. Rick, you know, at Linda Center, the think tank I run is based in Manhattan. I can't get people to show up at events because Manhattan's unsafe because nobody's being prosecuted for felony crimes, and that's because of Alvin Bragg. So the guy that is going after Trump for the barest of circumstance or reason is literally allowing New York to become a hellscape, and I don't think that's a good look, and most foreign leaders recognize that.
All right, I want to turn to the Wall Street Journal reporter, Evan Gershkovich. He's been held by the Russians. President Biden hasn't said much. He was boarding the helicopter, and they asked him about it, press corps, and he said, well, let him go. That was the message to Russia. And then they asked him if they would be expelling any of the diplomats or taking any of that action, and he said, not at this time. I think the only thing he forgot to say when he said let him go was pretty please, because that's about the extent of the response we've seen so far. Number one, should we be maybe a little more forceful about this and tell us what you know about this arrest?
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's the issue. The Russians are speaking to Russian in the language of the Cold War, and Biden is giving back baby talk, essentially. It's completely insane. And I don't know who's advising Biden. I think it's Blinken. But every time they have a soft response to something that clearly would require fortitude and strength, they don't. And this is another example of that. Now, with that said, the Wall Street Journal reporter, apparently, I've only got this from one source I do tend to trust. The guy was trying to figure out, he was going out to parts of Russia where they're producing tanks. And obviously, one of the big mysteries, Rick, everybody wants to know, and this is something that's not super secret, but it is to the Russians, is the number of tanks being produced. Obviously, the number of tanks that are being produced will have an impact on what forces the Russians can bring to bear in Ukraine. It's a legitimate question, and reporters go out and seek answers. I believe that's what he was seeking. Unfortunately, the Russians consider that defense information. It's secret. So, a reporter's legitimate right to report, and the Russians' right to consider certain information classified, you know, we do the same thing. We consider our numbers of tanks being produced and where they're being produced a classified matter relating to state secrets. So my understanding is that was what he was after. He got caught, and it's going to be a bit of a mess to try to get him out of there. But, you know, again, Rick, this was going on during the Cold War. This happened all the time. It's just this administration doesn't seem to understand that we are essentially in a form of Cold War, much of which they've made. They've helped create the conditions for this. And the guy's kind of caught up on that. So I do expect it'll be worked out. They're going to have to do a deal to get him back. But, you know, this is kind of part of the new Cold War we have with the Russians.
You've got the Thought to Action podcast. What's on this weekend?
So we've been doing a series of things relating to the current situation. We just had on Judge Napolitano doing some stuff with us. I had Colonel Doug McGregor talking about the stuff we just talked about relating to the war. And we've been doing a series of things just focusing on the Constitution as well, relating to what the Congress should be doing in the current war regarding accountability. Apparently there was a bill voted down in the Senate saying we should have a single Inspector General overseeing the budget. Imagine that. We don't. The Senate voted down the idea of an IG overseeing the budget of all the money we're going to Ukraine. It's just insane. But anyway, they can catch things like that on our podcast. And as always, Rick, thanks for having me on.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, as always, thank you so much, Tony.
Thank you.
We're at 7:45, Saturday morning update. We'll talk to KT McFarland next. But first, Mike Franciotti is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Eastbound Interstate 66 at the Roslyn Tunnel. That earlier problem now gone. Traffic moves well despite the wet pavement along Interstate 66. No reports of any issues on the Beltway. 395 looking good in the main lines of Interstate 95. They are moving well. No problems on the Beltway in Maryland. Interstate 95 and the BW Parkway between both Beltways looking good. The I-270 corridor at this time wide open. Once again, very gusty winds today, so the possibility of objects being blown on the roadway are there. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Tracking early morning rain and a few claps of thunder out there for your Saturday, but temperatures will start to warm into the 70s due to the very windy southwest winds. That will start to pick up right around your lunchtime. I expect those gusts to reach 49 to even 55 miles per hour between 5 and 8 p.m. as the main boundary pushes through. That could also bring a slight chance for a few showers later this evening as well. Winds stay breezy overnight, but then tomorrow they start to back off. Temperatures cooler in the 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
64 degrees in the nation's capital. It's 7:46 on the Saturday morning update. The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor. She's a board member of the American Conservative Union and the author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, always honored to have you with us.
Honor and a pleasure. Thank you, Rick.
You know, cable news has been dominated by the nonstop coverage of the Trump indictment. Other stories this week just dropped off a map, and the arraignment scheduled for Tuesday, so the focus of all Trump all the time on the news will continue throughout the next week. But there are two important stories that have been overshadowed. And, you know, KT, we always count on you to kind of cut through the confusion and look at what's really important. And the first story involves China. It is not front and center now, but it could have a devastating effect in the long term.
Yeah, and this is what sort of set my hair on fire this week, is China clearly in the last 5 weeks has been moving out to say that the United States is finished. It's now the Chinese global order, and they've done a number of things to make it look real. But what they did that nobody's paid a bit of attention to is that they're also moving to replace the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. It might happen, might never happen, and if it does happen, it won't happen right away. But it's probably the most significant thing that could happen. Now, the world currency is the currency the world uses to buy and sell things in other countries. It's the currency that the world has the most confidence in, that it won't get too inflated, it won't collapse. It has the full faith of a secure government behind it, and that's the dollar. So if you want to buy something, if you're somebody in Saudi Arabia and you want to sell oil to pick your country, Poland, you do it in dollars. You don't just send a shipload of oil in exchange for a boatload of agricultural goods. The dollar is the way people transact any kind of transaction in the world. Now, in the past, it was the British pound, sterling. And for a while, it was the euro dollar. But now it's only the dollar. And that's to great advantage to us. The Chinese have said and are trying to show the world, no, well, forget about the dollar. It's unreliable. Those Americans are inflating it. Their politics are so screwed up. America is no longer the world leader. Let's use the Chinese currency, the yuan. And so in the last couple of weeks, what's happened is that the Saudi Arabians have said they're going to sell oil to China, but they're not going to use dollars. They're going to use the Chinese currency. Brazil just said the same thing yesterday. Now, why does that matter? Well, it's way, way, way too much in the weeds to talk about this right now. But here's what would happen if the U.S. dollar got replaced. Think of it this way. You borrowed too much money on your credit cards, and you cannot meet those monthly payments. But your family says, no, you can't cut back on your spending. I need this. I need that. And so you just keep borrowing more. And at a certain point, there are fewer and fewer places that will lend to you. So the rate that you have to pay to borrow that money goes up. Now, imagine that something you'd never counted on. Let's say the interest rate goes up. Instead of just paying whatever you're paying, 5, 8, 10%, somehow the interest rate goes to 50% because nobody trusts you to be able to pay that money back. Then you get into a death spiral with your currency. Now, individuals in Victorian England, for example, you had to go to debtor's prison, and Dickens writes all about debtor's prison. People can't pay their money back, so they go to jail for life. In other countries, companies, if they do it, they declare bankruptcy. They get put on a strict plan to repay their debts. If an individual gets into that point, he declares personal bankruptcy and then starts over. But countries cannot declare bankruptcy. They could default on their loans. They could say, look, we're not going to pay you back on those treasury bills you bought. But usually, in every one of these cases, it means a major reduction in the standard of living of its citizens. So what we're looking at, and it won't be slow, and it may not even happen, but it could be that the United States' debt is so bad, and our inability to cut back on our spending is so bad, and the Biden administration and the Democrats' agendas are so anti-growth that we can't grow our way out of our debt, that we could have a currency the world no longer respects, and then whammo, it would hit us. Then the second thing that really put my hair on fire is with the U.S. tech leaders, Elon Musk, others, they said, hey, wait a minute, we should have a pause in artificial intelligence development, you know, the deep fakes, until the nations of the world have a chance to figure out how it's going to affect civilization and perhaps the direction on how the artificial intelligence goes. Well, you know, something, good luck with that. Putin has said several years ago, the first country that develops AI will rule the world. The Chinese certainly think so, and that's been the big push of their tech development. They plan to be the world's AI superpower by the end of the century. And then the Chinese Communist Party will control everything, how we think, how we act, not just in China, but the world. I mean, for example, TikTok, the reason that TikTok is so bad, it's not just that the Chinese are going to hoover up all the information on your cell phone and in your contact list and who you're talking to and who you email and where you surf the web. What they do next is what's scary, and that's the AI part of it. They use artificial intelligence to then program stuff aimed directly at you as an individual to scramble your brain. So that if you're a teenage girl that goes to a lot of websites about weight reduction, maybe they send stuff to you about anorexia or suicide or body image stuff to the point where they want to destroy the American society from within. The poll that was last week about the majority of Democrats don't believe in patriotism or God or their country or all those other things, that's a sign of a country that's rotted from within. And that's what the Chinese hope to exploit.
So when we had a similar issue with nuclear weaponry, we had treaties. But in this case, if, let's say, Elon Musk gets a lot of the U.S. tech leaders and other global tech leaders to do this quote-unquote pause, do we really expect that China and Russia are going to adhere, number one, to the pause or adhere to anything else that may come down the pike on this in terms of some kind of an effort for a global treaty?
Well, that's what's so frightening about it. With nuclear weapons or any kind of arms control treaties, whether it was World War I, World War II, the Cold War, we could see what the other guys were doing. with artificial intelligence, you don't necessarily see what the other people are doing. And that, I think, is the most terrifying because there's no transparency in it. They control the ability to have it be transparent. So would anybody agree to this? I mean, you know, would you really agree to tie your hand behind your back in the middle of a knife fight? Probably not. And that's, I think, one of the biggest concerns is that the tech leaders in the U.S., they understand, Eric Schmidt, others understand how terrible this could be if it goes, you know, if we put too much faith in machines. I mean, that's Battlestar Galactica. That's when, like, machines take over the world, and if the Chinese are taking over the machines, it puts China and other authoritarian countries in this position of enormous power. But I don't see how anybody obeys any of these treaties. That's why when I look at the, you know, scrambling around and Alvin Bragg and Donald Trump and, you know, the Biden craziness, and I just think, wow, America's about to enter the most critical and challenging period of its history. And who do we have as leaders? I mean, we're all ripping each other apart over stupid stuff. And we're not keeping, we're totally ignoring the main civilization threatening things that we face.
Any thoughts on what the Congress could do or possibly should do? I mean, what,
yeah, I mean,
what,
how do we figure out? I mean, first thing we do is we need to get our act together as a country and stop ripping at each other apart. And I had dinner with a very influential congressman last night in Florida. And I said, so a man who's very wise and who's been around for a long time. He said, you know, the members of Congress, the only thing they care about is raising enough money for the next election. He said, Republicans and Democrats. So they don't care about the country. They don't think about the long-run consequences of what they're doing. They're just all looking at the next election. Now, I don't know how we have a spiritual revival in the United States so people care more about the country than their own immediate self-interest and gratification. But it would sure be nice if we could figure out at least how to find some common ground, whether it's on Social Security or whether it's on gun control or the border. I do think that the country wants it. Maybe the people in Washington don't. But if we could find common ground on just one important issue, I think it may reverse course and we could start addressing these bigger issues. But until we get a different breed of leader in Washington, and that's up to us. That's up to the voters.
KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor and the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. As always, KT, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
That is it for the Saturday morning update. We appreciate you being with us. Watch out. It is April Fool's Day, so make sure you don't get pranked. And we'll see you later on this afternoon on Garden Sense coming up at 1 o'clock.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.